and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm glad you've decided to join us. I'm also glad to be back in Detroit and back in the studio after a week away. It was a needed respite, but I'm really excited to be back here, especially as we get really close to the holiday season, which is my favorite part of the year. And of course, the city is looking quite sparkly, and there are all kinds of wonderful things happening in the next few weeks to celebrate the end of the year. It really is a special time. So I hope that you are taking advantage as well of all the cheer and all the fun. Today, we want to continue our look at the Republican Party and at conservatism, what they stand for, what challenges they face, particularly with voters, and what the future looks like after, for them, a disappointing midterm election. And of course, as we gear up for 2024 and the next presidential contest. Before we get to our guests, though, I want to talk just a little about why we have been doing this. It's no secret, of course, that my politics don't match with conservatives or the GOP. Increasingly, that's just true on almost every issue. But here on the show, one of the things we really value is pluralism of ideas and of ideals. And as much as we want to lift up ideas that are similar to or reinforce our own, we also want to have inquiring and incisive conversations about competing ideas. And when the other side is in some sort of crisis, as conservatism almost surely is, it's absolutely worth talking about why and what might solve the troubles on that side of the spectrum. This is really important right now because you have a lot of folks in the Republican Party who seem to want to burn down the systems and institutions that structure our republic. In Michigan, for example, the Republicans at the top of the midterm ticket didn't believe that the 2020 election results were legitimate. All three of them said they had real doubts or just didn't have any faith in the result. All three of them wanted to make it harder for people to vote instead of easier. They supported gerrymandering and other tactics that make our system less democratic. Now, they lost, by and large, here in the state of Michigan. The red wave that people were predicting was absolutely beaten back here in the Great Lakes state. But much of the same sentiment that these Republicans are indulging is what culminated in the January 6th attempted insurrection. And it was supported also by several candidates who were running here in Michigan and around the country. So at this point in our series of conversations on conservatism, we've talked about the contradictions between conservatism and the Republican Party. We've explored different dimensions of what the party wants and what ideals are powering the party. And we've tried to come up with what it means to be a Republican or a conservative now, and how this tension inside the party between those who want to indulge election denial and insurrections and those who want to stick to more traditional ideals, how do we resolve that? How does the party go forward from this point? Today, we want to talk with a longtime conservative from right here in Michigan, who has seen the party change an awful lot, not just in the last decade, but over a long period of time. Nolan Findlay is a conservative editorial page editor for the Detroit News. He's been swimming in conservative circles here in Michigan for quite some time. He's also a partner of mine in our work and somebody I have become quite fond of over the last 15 years. Nolan, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you, as always.
Yes, always great to have you here. So I want to start with some of what I was just talking about in the open there. I want to know what you make of Republican Party candidates that ran at the top of the ticket here in Michigan. You supported some of them.
Some of them.
One of the three, right? And as I said, these are candidates who were really attacking some of the institutional stability that I think is really important in our republic. I want to have you talk about the process from your chair of looking at these candidates and deciding how to dole out the news' support in this election. I mean, I think it'd be really interesting for listeners to understand how you make those decisions and then how you came up with the things that you ultimately said and did.
Well, you know, we interviewed all the candidates and looked at their position and, you know, look at where they were going forward. You know, we ended up endorsing Tudor Dixon because we felt she better represented our hopes for what a governor might do over the next 4 years. We didn't endorse the other two at the top of the ticket because they were, you know, just simply unacceptable and no business at all being on the ticket. Didn't really consider them conservatives, true conservatives in any fashion. They were polluted with the same sort of poison that has infected much of the Republican Party, and that is the populism brought into the party by Donald Trump. And populism and conservatism are, in my mind, incompatible. But you have a lot of that in the Republican Party and this time, and it made it a very difficult time for us in some races. I mean, there's still a lot of good conservatives in the mix here. We talked with the top of the ticket candidate. We did endorse Tudor Dixon, and we're satisfied that going forward, she would be a rational, acceptable choice as governor. Were we wild about her? No, but that was a sort of a condition of the time. We were wild about many people in this election.
For me, when I'm looking at candidates and political races, there are certain things that I would say are kind of automatic disqualifiers, right? Mm-hmm. People who say or believe things that I can't get past to even think about some of the other things that they might believe. I would put support for the January 6th insurrection or any kind of association with that in that category. I'd also put election denial, the extreme effort to disqualify the votes, particularly of Detroiters and African-American Detroiters in 2020 in that category. And yet, it seems that for you and for the Detroit News, those aren't disqualifiers. I mean, Tudor Dixon was an election denier. Lisa McClain, who's a member of Congress now and was running for re-election, is somebody who walked people through the Capitol the day before January 6th, 2021. So I want to have you talk about why those things aren't disqualifiers for you and why you don't see them, I guess, as fundamental threats to either the party or to the ideals of conservatism.
You know, we talked with both candidates. We talked with them extensively about these issues. We were satisfied with Tudor Dixon's answers in particular and where she stood on election integrity, where she stood on honoring the will of the people, and we're satisfied that she would obey the law and adhere to the adhere to the standards that we expected. We just felt in both of those instances they were better for us and for what we were hoping to see over the next 2 or 4 years for the state and this country than their opponents were. We were not pleased at all with a governor who took a dictatorial stance during the pandemic, suspended civil liberties, which very important to us as a conservative newspaper. We found those deal breakers, Steve. I mean, there are a lot of, you talk about deal breakers, there are a lot of things important to us, too. And one was, respecting individual freedoms and respecting civil liberties. And both of them disappeared for long stretches in this state under Gretchen Whitmer. And she never paused to examine whether the course she was on was right or wrong, was doing damage or doing the best she could. She was stubborn and bullied ahead. We couldn't really see that for another 4 years as acceptable to us. Also, very much a lack of transparency. She didn't feel the obligation to discuss the people's business with the people. You know, it was do it and like it and shut up. And so, you know, we were about tired of that sort of governing. And we found in Tudor Dixon someone who we hoped, no guarantee, obviously, that what a candidate says or does on a campaign trail is going to be how he or she governs. But we found that to be a better path for us. We could not see another 4 years of Gretchen Whitmer. And, you know, had it been any one of the other 10 or 5 or 10 Republican candidates who started that race might not have felt the same, but we thought she was acceptable.
So I mean, I think it's really interesting to hear you compare the governor's performance during a world epidemic, a global epidemic, an emergency response to things like election denial and insurrection, and I think on a substantive basis, that's kind of a strange comparison to me, or a strange parallel. But I do want to drill down a little more on how you feel then that. These conservative ideals, what are the conservative ideals, I guess, that matter the most to you? And I think that's what is represented here is a disconnect between us and, of course, between liberals and conservatives about what is important. I mean, the sanctity of the vote, the idea of the peaceful transference of power, those seem to me to be not just conservative ideals, but also liberal ideals, and the idea that somehow somebody who's responding to a global pandemic that we didn't know a lot about as it was unfolding, and did what she thought was right to try to keep people safe, there's something about that doesn't wash with me.
Well, that's always the time when you need your civil liberties most. When you have a government that feels
we needed our lives the most, yeah.
I mean, well, you know, that's always the most dangerous time. That's always when people lose their civil liberties, the most civil liberties, Steve. And when you have the government saying, well, we're going to protect you from this great threat, so we're going to strip away your basic liberties and rights for your own good. That's what those rights exist to protect you against. And that's very serious for us. I mean, we saw some of the things that were going on, and we spoke about them during the pandemic to be very troubling and very threatening to our basic liberties, our basic rights as Americans, and a threat to democracy. And we saw some of the very bad outcomes from arbitrary and capricious policies and the suspension of representative governing. I think we would have done much better much better during the pandemic had we had representative government intact and more voices with a say in the process. Now, first few weeks, first month, obviously, you know, we supported what happened. But long term, suspending representative governing and having one person rule is never a good idea. I don't care what the crisis is. I mean, that didn't happen in the world in World War II. I mean, Roosevelt didn't set aside the Congress and say, "Hey, I'm going to do what's best for you because your lives are at stake." Mm.
So I do want to talk about how this all fits into your view of conservatism and the Republican Party. You and I have had this conversation for some time now, and I know that you're somebody who's given a lot of thought to how these ideals are expressed by Republicans and how they're not, and what this battle is, I guess, at the core of the Republican Party. I mean, it's something that seems to now define party contests and the ideas that Republicans say they want to enact when they're elected. But give me a sense of how you judge the party at this point, and how it, I guess, fits with your idea of what's a conservative.
Well, excuse me. Republicanism and conservatism, not the same thing, never was the same thing wholly, and it's certainly not now. You've got a war in the party between populism and conservatism, and again, they're not compatible. You know, you saw Donald Trump during his years purport himself as a conservative. There was nothing conservative about Donald Trump or what he stood for. You know, we conservatives, true conservatives, stand for free people, free minds, free markets. You saw a lot of encroachment on those ideals over the last 5 or 6 years by people who called themselves Republicans. You know, their principle went out the door, and I think to large part is still out the door in favor of you know, winning elections. And, you know, in the end, I think it backfired on them. If Republicans had stuck to conservative principles, I think they would have had a much broader appeal to the electorate.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with my friend Nolan Finley, who is the editorial page editor of the Detroit News. We're going to get to you on the phones and on social as well. 313-577-1019 is the number. Give me a call. Let us know what you think of conservatism and the Republican Party right now, where you think it stands, what trouble you see inside the Republican Party, especially if you are a conservative or a Republican. Of course, we want to hear from you about how you're taking all this in and figuring it out. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. On 101.9 WDET, I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. My guest is Nolan Finley. He is the editorial page editor of the Detroit News, someone who considers himself a conservative, often aligns with the Republican Party and its candidates, but sometimes does not. We're talking about conservatism and the Republican Party, how the two match up with each other, how the two contend with each other right now. A lot of turmoil inside the Republican Party about what conservatism is or is not and what the party should be doing. We want to hear from you as well on the phones, especially if you are a conservative. Let us know what you make of all of this trouble on the right side of the political spectrum, much of it inspired by former President Donald Trump. But I think 2 years after he was not reelected, there's lots of other representatives, I think, of that same trouble. And this seems to have legs far beyond the former president. What do you think of that? Where do you think it's headed in the next 2 years as we get ready for yet another presidential contest? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Let's start today with Patricia in St. Clair Shores. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to make a comment when he says that Governor Whitmer was impinging on our civil rights. What about the rights of those of us who wanted to live and used our masks and got our booster shots? You know, he thinks that only one group of people in this country have civil rights, and that's the ones that don't want to follow any recommendations.
Great point, Patricia. I really appreciate the call. Nolan, how do you answer that?
Well, I mean, I never, you know, said that you shouldn't follow recommendations. I got my vaccine, and I wore my mask, still wear it on airplanes. But what I believe is we could have protected ourselves and trusted people to protect themselves and do the right thing for themselves and their neighbors without taking away their basic liberties and their basic rights. I mean, we don't do that in this country. We've never done that at any point in this country before to the extent we did during that pandemic. So, you know, I'm not buying that I need an autocratic governor. I need a dictator to tell me to protect myself. I didn't. And I think as we learned more and more about the pandemic and about the COVID virus, we should have been willing to adjust our policies, to challenge our positions, and to make corrections. And we weren't. And so you asked me why we endorsed Tudor Dixon. You know, was that our most enthusiastic choice ever? No, I'm not going to lie. But we just could not reward a governor who so eagerly and willingly seized total power in this state. That's just anathema to me as a conservative.
So I want to ask you about another governor and his efforts to seize control of cities over and over. Rick Snyder ran talking about bringing a tougher hand, I guess, to finances in cities. And as governor, indulged the idea that you could suspend local democracy, essentially move elected officials out of the way in order to have the state manage their finances. He also did that over the objection of voters who statewide had said, hey, we don't want this for the way that we manage our cities. And he went ahead and figured out a way around that. It seems like that's similar, at least in some ways, to what you're criticizing Gretchen Whitmer for. And he said the same thing.
It's
a financial emergency in his mind was justification for that. In her mind, a worldwide pandemic, which I would say is a little more of an emergency. But what's the difference?
Oh, well, the difference is clear. I mean, he was following the Constitution of the state and these local communities that he stepped in and took financial control of, he had fiduciary responsibility for. They were, under our Constitution, entities of the state. They're not freestanding, independent entities. And he followed the state law. He didn't have to suspend a single law to do the things he did. He didn't have to do end arounds any law in Michigan. In fact, he followed the emergency management law that his predecessor.
But wasn't the law itself an end around? Wasn't the law itself an end around from the referendum where people said, hey, we don't want this?
And we never supported the emergency manager's law. We were always, feel that people should suffer the consequences of their bad choices at the ballot booth rather than being bailed out. But Rick Snyder followed the law. He didn't have to suspend any laws or to do the things he did under the Emergency Manager Act. And, you know, we were glad to see it go, but I don't think you can make a comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I think we would probably argue long and hard about that and never come to an agreement.
He had responsibility under Michigan's Constitution for these local governments.
And she had a responsibility under the Constitution to protect people's public health. And that, I mean,
necessary, Steve. That's not how democracy works, and that's not how there's no caveat in the Bill of Rights that says, hey, these things go away when times get tough.
Well,
it's when
what
times
it says
get tough that they're designed to protect them.
What it says is that the government can suspend your property rights. It can suspend your rights to freedom. It can end your life, in fact, as long as it follows due process. And it doesn't, these rights are not absolute.
There certainly was no due process here during the pandemic. I mean, she set the legislature on its side, and those things were unacceptable to us. They remain unacceptable to us.
Yeah, Yeah. Again, I love arguing with you, Nolan. And we'll never agree on that, but I do appreciate making really clear how you're thinking these things through. And Patricia, again, thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Charlie in Detroit. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I guess I got to ask Nolan, is he an election denier?
Great question, Charlie. You know, I should have started there. He and I have had that conversation a number of times, and I know the answer, but maybe listeners have not heard him say it. Nolan, talk about your take on the election denying that is defining so many of the campaigns these days, and not just between Republicans and Democrats, but within the Republican Party in the primaries in particular. This is a big issue.
Well, no, I mean, I've spoken out from the very beginning that the election was not stolen and that Donald Trump should have shut up and gone away. I mean, we've been very clear on that. I've been very clear personally, and the newspaper has since day one. We never harbored any doubts about the outcome of the election.
Yeah, yeah. And where do you feel that puts you in the conversation about what the Republican Party is going to stand for? As I said, we had three election deniers at the top of the ticket. If you go down to the congressional level, you had lots of folks running as Republicans here in the state who believed that there was something illegitimate about the 2020 election results. How much does that issue define Republicanism right now, and how do you get to a place where maybe it doesn't?
I think we're at that place now. I don't think you're going to see that be the prevalent issue or position going forward. I think a lot of the people you're talking about who, you know, express some concern or doubts or what have you about the election were was simply cowardice at work. They were afraid of Donald Trump. You talk to a lot of them as individuals, they knew better than that. So I think there was a good deal of cowardice. You know, Trump was a very intimidating figure for a lot of the office holders in the Republican Party. And I think a lot of that was at work. But I don't think that's going to be an issue going forward. I'm 100% confident it won't be. You saw a little of it in the 2020 election, but not very much. I think people have learned their lesson. Most people have learned their lesson and moved on.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Charlie.
I'm sorry, 22 election.
Yeah. Yeah, Charlie, appreciate the call and the question. Let's go next to Dennis in Dearborn. Dennis, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hey, Dennis.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Okay. Let me just say I'm absolutely inspired by your friendship over the years. So I think we all have something to learn just by the social dynamics of the two of you. I think definitions are really important, so anthropology. What is your anthropology, conservative? What is your anthropology, liberal? And, you know, the word liberal, and I tend to be liberal, is freedom. So I get really frustrated that the word freedom is taken away or not looked at on my side of the thinking when I especially look at, I'm a trained community organizer, and we come down to that people have agency, the ability to act. What more freedom can you have? And that comes from that side. Maybe the two of you are wordsmiths a little bit better, but I think it was called a modal verb. So we have verbs. The conservatives want to act. The liberals want to act. The word should, I think, comes from the it applies to the conservative side more because they say, this is what you should do, this is what you should do. Now, I know there's going to be argument there, but on the liberal side, the modal verb could talked about possibilities. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, Dennis, I really appreciate the call and the thoughts. You know, that word liberty or that word freedom is something that I think is common across political parties. But as Dennis points out, Nolan, it means different things to different people. And of course, our history has a lot to do with that. But let's just for a second talk about what you mean when you say freedom or liberty, and how you see that as a conservative value.
Well, I think I stand with the founders. I think there are certain God-given liberties that are inviolable, and by the government or by anyone else. And you know, as a conservative, I believe in as Dennis was talking about the origins of words or the root of words. I believe in conserving the traditions, the values, the institutions that have taken us this far. You know, that's I believe, as you know, very strongly in the power of the individual and the rights of the individual, as well as individual responsibility.
And when
the rule of law and
I think one of the differences. Yeah, I think one of the differences is often in the sort of ideal of freedom or liberty and the sort of practical execution of the kind of liberty or freedom that has taken place since the founding. I think much of what defines modern progressivism is the push to fulfill that liberty for all people on an equal basis. And so when we say things like freedom or liberty, we're thinking more of equality and the inequality that's been enforced by, you know, by governments from federal to local since the founding. And I think with conservatives, it is this ideal that the ideals themselves were enough, and that you just got to protect what was put in place.
I don't accept that at all, Steve. I don't think it's true at all. I think when you talk about freedom and liberty, you see it as a group ideal. And I believe the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the founders were trying to create a very wide space for the individual to stand unmolested from the government, that it's an individual. These are individual rights, and they have to be exercised and protected as individual rights. And, I think that's one of the big differences between conservatism and progressivism. I think too often
but that idea of
are willing to roll over the individual to secure what in their minds are liberties and freedoms for a group.
Well, but that's not
individuals within that group are less important. And I don't, you know, I.
But
I
we didn't come to that idea. That we didn't come to the idea through an ideal. I guess what I'm saying is that we come to
we
come to that idea through the practical application of what liberty has meant since the beginning. So, for instance, African Americans were identified as a group by the same founders mm-hmm. who talked about individual liberty and freedom to be denied that freedom. Women were identified by those founders as a group to be denied those freedoms and liberties as a group. And so it's not that women or African Americans or other people who are left out self-identified as a group to be able to do those things. It's that we were identified as unequal and outside the protections of those liberties. And so the political activism and the legislation and all of the things that we do as a group are meant to push back on a group identifier, a group label that has been put on us. It's not that we don't believe in individual liberty. Of course we do. And what we're fighting for is the same individual liberty that everybody else had. But we were denied those things as a group. So how else do you push back against it?
But you see that avenue as transferring the responsibility for those rights to the government from the individual. And, you know, you see the government, the big hand of government, as, you know, a good steward of those rights. And
I think it can be. I think it hasn't been. It hasn't been.
I don't think it has been at all. And I think that's why, I mean, you know, you mentioned the great wrongs of our founding, and certainly there's no denying those. But the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the only avenue for remedy there. And you take those away, and there is no avenue for remedy for oppressed groups, for groups who have been denied the rights that the Constitution promises. And there's no denying that's happened. But the Constitution is also the only fix. It's the only way out.
Yeah, no, that's where we would agree, is that the Constitution and its promises are disenfranchised groups have to look to empower.
Then, Steve, you can't transfer then so much of the power from the individual to the government. I, as an individual, a flawed individual, obviously, but I don't need the government to act on my behalf, to run my life, to protect me from myself. You know, I'm perfectly capable of taking the rights that the Constitution gives me and living a happy, productive life if, you know, the government will stay as much as possible out of my way.
I would agree with that, except that the government has been in my way for 200 and almost 50 years. And that's and that's the point. I mean, the government has had its thumb on the scale against African Americans, against women, against other people who were decided to be disfavored at the founding, and what we're trying to do is get government to stop doing that, right?
Which is, you know, why I am always curious about why you invest so much trust in government itself. I don't.
I think I'm investing that trust in the same thing you're investing that trust in, which is the Constitution itself. And the government is the arm that protects those rights for everybody. Your rights are not more important than mine.
Too often it's the arm that denies you those rights or tries to limit those rights. You look at that space that the Bill of Rights carves out for the individual to stand unmolested from the government, as I said before, shrinking more and more and more as the government imposes on those rights for, you know, the greater good. I think those, you know, this idea of the greater good is the most dangerous concept to individual liberty that there is.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this really spirited conversation with my friend Nolan Finley, the editorial page editor of the Detroit News. We'll also continue to hear from you on the phones and on Twitter. Philip in Royal Oak, John on the East Side, Norman in Bloomfield Hills. We'll get to you next. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET, and my guest is Nolan Finley, the editorial page editor of the Detroit News. Today we are continuing our series of conversations with conservatives and Republicans about what's going on in their party, all of the turmoil that we see, and the change that's taking place inside the Republican Party. What does it all mean, and where is it all headed? Especially important questions as we get ready to start hearing from candidates who would like to be elected president in 2024. We want to hear from you as well on the phones and on social media. You can call us at 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Before we get back to our listeners, Nolan, I want to talk to you just a little about people you see who you think do embody conservatism, who are inside the Republican Party and who may represent a path forward, both at the national level and here at the state level.
Well, at the national level, I'm a big fan of Nikki Haley. I would hope that she finds her way on the ticket in 2024. I think she's a good, solid conservative and a very intelligent person. I think she would be an excellent choice at the top of the ticket. You know, in Michigan, you know, there are some people that, you know, term limits over the years have taken out of the legislature, never really found their next place, if you will. I would hope there's a role in the future of the state for Tom Leonard, for example. You know, and there's some good, very good legislators elected in the last election, newcomers, Senator Lindsey from down in the Monroe area, Ivy League graduate, West Point graduate, very bright young man, I think's got a big future in the state. So, you know, I think there are some very encouraging individuals and candidates out there.
Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Philip in Royal Oak. Philip, welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning.
Hey, Philip.
I had a quick comment, and I wanted to hear your guest respond to what I see as conservatives and Republican leaders accepting or, in some cases, a tacit approval of political violence, and like especially violence as a means to an end in political arenas. So I'll listen off air. Thank you.
Philip, appreciate the call. Nolan, go ahead.
No place for violence. I think we've come to this point in the country. We have too many people who think, well, my cause is so righteous, I can engage in the worst sort of behavior. We're seeing it across the spectrum. I don't think there's any place for violence in politics.
What would you have done, or what would you like to see done in response to what happened on January 6th of last year? There's, of course, a congressional effort to try to hold some folks accountable. I know you're not a fan of that, but tell me what you would do. How would you respond to that?
I think the response we've seen is the only appropriate response. The people who broke into the Capitol and who rampaged and acted in the worst possible way, how many of them have been arrested and prosecuted? You know, that process is going forward. A lot of people are paying the price they should pay for such an act. I don't know what the exact number of people who've been prosecuted so far, but I think it's a good number.
But what about those who gave inspiration to or aid and comfort to the folks who were going to do that or who did that? And here I'm thinking specifically about someone like Lisa McLean, who's a member of Congress, who led people through the Capitol before they came the next day, you know, with violence in mind.
I don't think you can say, well, gosh, Lisa McLean supported Trump's nonsense, so we're going to take her out and hang her or something. I mean, if she committed a crime, prosecute her for the crime, but tell me the crime she committed.
I guess I'm not asking about
kangaroo courts here, you know, doing some sort of purge, if that's what you're suggesting. I mean, I don't see the...
I guess I'm not thinking just about legal consequence, but why should someone like that be in the Congress, and also, why should she be getting support from conservative conservative voices. I mean,
well, she's in Congress.
She's in because she got elected.
Because the people put her there, and I don't think you or anyone else has the right to tell the people, you know, who they can vote for or what their choices can be. That some people are just simply not eligible for the vote. I mean, she met the qualifications of the ballot, and the people supported her, and you know, whether that was the right choice or not, or the wrong choice, not really for you to decide. The people made the choice. We went with Lisa McClain, not our favorite congressperson by any means, over her opponent, because we didn't want to send the Democratic Party another vote in the House, another vote in the Congress, given the damage they've done to the country over the last 2 years. So, I mean, we didn't believe the country could stand two more years of unchecked Democratic power in Washington.
But it could withstand congressional representatives who supported a violent attempt to over. See, this is the thing that I keep coming back to.
You keep saying that she's
you're making
that.
Well,
and again,
I mean,
again,
I,
Steve, we're not.
She's certainly associated
me,
with
let
it. Come
me
on.
Answer you.
Well,
she certainly supported Donald Trump and his nonsense. We think there are, you know, we felt there are a lot of dangers to democracy. And we think what's happened over the last 2 years of reckless and irresponsible governing on behalf of the Democrats is a threat to democracy.
Is the same certainly as a, is, do you, but you would equate that with the insurrection? Would you, I mean.
Certainly not. It's a threat to, you know, the quality of life of Americans and the ability of Americans to, you know, raise their families and send their kids to college and to do the things, realize the hopes and dreams for their families. This couldn't go on in my mind. You couldn't have two more years of by any means necessary governing. I think that having the agencies of government, you know, work actively to undermine elected officials, including the president, is a threat to democracy. And that's what we've seen over the last several years. And, you know, enough's enough. Yeah. Wasn't going to send another progressive down to Washington to affirm the damaging things Joe Biden and the Democratic Congress were trying to do.
Yeah, I guess
that was my rationale.
Yeah, I guess I will die on the hill of not comparing policy imperatives to insurrection. I mean, I can't believe
ahead.
You're making that comparison.
I didn't think, you know, Lisa McClain was ever going to get a chance to deny another election, if you will. But her opponent might have had a chance to cast. I doubt it. Might have had a chance to go to Washington and cast a lot of votes, damaging to the nation.
We're not going to agree on this, but I do appreciate
But you talk about threats to democracy. I feel there are a lot of threats to democracy. I think the undermining of the nation's economic foundation is a threat to democracy.
It's not that I wouldn't agree that those might be threats.
People in desperate situations. I think when you have a party in power and in absolute power who believes that because they feel they're so right that they can govern by any means necessary and ignore constitutional norms, I think that's a threat to democracy. I think what you've seen happening in the Justice Department over the last few years is a threat to democracy. So there are a lot of threats here that concern me, and I know concern you. Did we hold our nose here and pick what we believe was the lesser of two evils? Absolutely. I won't deny that. I'm not going to be standing up here and say, wow, that's one great congresswoman. But, you know, to us, it was important that to break that unchecked power that Democrats held over Washington because I felt they were abusing it and abusing it in major ways.
Well, we'll have to disagree on that, and that's fine. But I really do.
Well, that's what makes us who we are.
What makes us who we are. Absolutely. But I do, of course, appreciate you coming onto the show to talk about conservatism and Republicans and all of the things that are happening. Nolan, it's always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for being here.
Always glad to, Steve. I wish you had an afternoon show instead of a morning show.
That's right, so you can sleep in. All right, that is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow. We're going to talk with two black suburban business owners who are trying to make the suburbs a more supportive place for black entrepreneurs when they operate outside of the city of Detroit. Really interesting issue as the suburbs become much more diverse here in Metro Detroit than they have been historically. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.